Welcome to Commander and Coffee, the only podcast that does both of those things. My name is Y.
And I'm Cork.
I couldn't think of a better intro. It was great, though.
I'm okay
for that. I thought it worked out.
It worked. It was
great. I mean, it's in the title. What do you want?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's you know, you get what you see. Yeah. It's pretty much standard.
This is episode number whatever it says on Spotify. I trust them more than I trust me to get it right.
A little bit of a different episode for you today.
Yep.
If you'll notice, there's only two of us here. One of our people was unable to make it right now, so Y and I are doing a live recording.
We are talking about Two-Headed Giant, which is kind of convenient because there's two of us.
Oh, oddly enough, yes, and we have partnered multiple times for Two-Headed Giant.
Yep, including this weekend.
Whenever this comes out. So.
Yeah, we will have played at least one more by the time this episode drops.
Absolutely. But first, why don't you talk a little bit about our coffee today?
Yeah, our coffee today is, I'm reading the bag, Sidamo G3 Natural. I don't know what that means. I can tell you it tastes fantastic, though. This is another certified banger from Grateful Roast Coffee. I will stop bringing up them in the episodes when they stop making amazing things. But this is one from the Sidamo region of Ethiopia. The bag is saying blackberry, cane sugar, plum, vanilla. It's an incredibly aromatic coffee. The blackberry really hits you up front on the nose right away. It's got a really good finish to it. So, smooth. I'm a fan.
Smooth. Very smooth.
Yep. I'm going to pretend like, oh, I just made it the first time. No, this is my second cup today. I had one this morning, and I just made one for Cork and I this evening, so.
I'm on cup of coffee number three today, so, yeah, here we are.
Very cool. Yeah, I really decided to treat myself today. I'm like, I'm going to make two cups of the nicest coffee I have today.
What do you think? It's like a Two-Headed Giant version of coffee?
Yeah.
I'll see myself out. So with that transition being absolutely terrible,
let's talk about something that isn't.
Yeah. Two-Headed Giant, I mean, as most people know, is two players, one body, effectively. It's two players playing one game. It's still like a 1v1, but there's four people involved. You see it a lot in Sealed. I believe it was one of the Zendikar sets really repopularized recently, the Two-Headed Giant format, because of the Surge mechanic, and we kind of wanted to bring it home to Commander, and when I moved back to the area, we kind of had this idea to kind of bring more people in, and Two-Headed Giant seemed like the natural fit to do so, because you could pair up with a partner who might have had more cards than you, and maybe could lend you some cards since he's your partner, and you know, it's a whole big thing, and it's a very community-driven type format, and you get to interact with your partner a lot more, you know, your partner could help you out in certain ways, certain aspects, and it's just more...
It encourages that cooperative environment that you want to foster at your local game store.
Encouraging
You're not just sharing a card pool, you're sharing strategy with each other.
Right.
Because you're not just playing against people, it really drives home the point that you're playing with people.
Right, absolutely. And that's the kind of the big thing at Y and I's local game store is the community. We're very community focused, and this was a good way to bring people up to speed with the competitive aspect of Commander. And with great success to the point of other people adopting the local rule set that we kind of developed here. And it's spreading kind of like wildfire around by us. We've gone to, just aside from our LGS's events, there have been, at the bare minimum, four other local shops, and by local I mean within a two-hour radius of us, that have been putting on these same events with minor differences, whether it be the proxy limit or, you know, something or anything else. Really?
Well, let's back it up a minute. Regular rules of Two-Headed Giant are kind of familiar, because like you said, New Zendikar, Battle Bond, if anyone played Duels of the Planeswalkers on Xbox,
yeah,
that, I love that. I wish they would bring it back for other
stuff. Bring back all duels.
That'd be sick. But yeah, this isn't out of the box a two-headed giant as most people are familiar with it. We've seen a couple examples of two-headed formats through, I mean, for me, I've seen a lot of Reddit posts from time to time on the CEDH subreddit asking, you know, what partners might be a good pair for each other. Time and time again, I see things like double Najeela being really good because Najeela triggers on whenever a warrior attacks. So you can be giving your partners, you can be helping your partner make more warriors with Najeela. It gets out of hand very fast playing something like double Najeela. And there are a lot of strategies that can boil down to just play two of the same commander, just play two of the same deck. And wow, they really synergize well with each other. Who knew? We have a little bit of a different take. We wanted to encourage stronger deck building, better strategy making. And like we were saying before, like Cork was saying, having that conversation with your teammate more, kind of having that dynamic back and forth.
The concept that we kind of took under our wing is the, from our previous life of being competitive Magic players is,
current life.
Yeah, I guess current life now.
Depends. I mean, I guess there's some debate on what's competitive anymore, right. But you know, traditional competitive Magic
is the unified constructed format, which, three players on a team typically only are allowed to play. Not typically, they are only allowed to play, one person plays those cards. So if one person's playing Monastery Swift Spear in their Delver deck, well, the other person can't play it in their Burn deck. So you gotta, it builds a great team-building aspect, and we took that into the two-headed giant format and said, hey, what if we make no overlapping colors? So, like what I said, double Najeela looks really good. Well, if you want to play Najeela, your partner has to play Mono Brown. Can't play anything else. So, Hope of Gariper, here we come.
Absolutely. Karn. I think one of our earliest tournaments, we had someone enter with old Karn, Silver Golem, yep. And was it Silver Queen? Yeah, we just wanted something that encouraged more back and forth conversation rather than two people just bringing the best decks they have. It's more, we wanted to make it more than just another Commander tournament. So it's its own thing. It's its own format in its own right now, we feel. And other card shops have taken that memo and kind of ran with it to seemingly really good success.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, many more places pick up on this idea. So we are making this video in hopes that it spreads down to you. Maybe it's already in your area of the, you know, the Eastern Coast, maybe.
Maybe.
It'd be really cool to see more of it happen. So yeah. We're going to talk about Two-Headed Giant from our perspective. But I think a lot of this conversation kind of goes into whatever your two-headed format might be at your own local game store.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I didn't know we were doing a video for this, but yeah. So first on the docket, per se, is some, like, neat deck ideas and some neat combo commander combos or commander strategies. So
the way we're going to do this, we're going to be beginning with some kind of general stuff and then getting narrower and narrower as we go. I think the most general way to start this conversation is talking about the archetype options, the kind of general strategies, and that kind of ties into the overall speed that you can expect from this format. And like I said, this is still a pretty early format. A lot can change. These are our best understandings of where things stand right now. And like any Magic format, that can shift and push and pull. And, you know, maybe you find something that works out. Please share it if you do.
Absolutely.
But, yeah.
It and like a lot of Magic, it's ever-changing. Like what I said, archetype tropes kind of fit the same mold here. Just sometimes you get to run double of it, which is pretty cool. From our experiences, personally, I can't speak for why. I mean, him and I have partnered many times, and we'll talk about a couple of our fun ones, you know, early on. But I found that the format tends to be slower than normal Commander, than normal four-player Commander pods. Maybe by a turn or so, because you're usually setting up and checking out and watching your opponents kind of getting the read out.
I feel like the analogy of comparing CEDH to Legacy is even more true in a two-headed format, because you have those very similar interaction pieces, your Force of Wills. You are able to pinpoint one opponent who's playing blue in this format, So you are playing around traditional things like Force of Wills and Dispels, because you know exactly where they're coming from in this format, and the threat assessment is pretty narrowed down onto just two players now. So Two-Headed Giant is in many ways similar to 1v1. It's more similar to 1v1 than it is a four-player pod. So,
which leads into some singles card discussion, which we'll get into later on.
Absolutely. So to talk about some archetype pairs that seem really strong right now, the first one, which I think the most of us kind of gravitated toward before anything else, a fast combo deck and a control deck. You have a fast combo that's trying to deploy its pieces, and then you have your partner holding up some kind of counter magic, some kind of disruptive interaction during that combo turn for your opponent's responses to it. That's kind of like the alley-oop of Two-Headed, really.
Right. I mean, that's every, even when you played in the Zendikar block, like with the Surge Mechanic or Battle Bond, like you said, people tend to play control and combo or aggro, you know, and basically prevent the opponent from stopping your partner. You're playing the support role if you want to get into RPG territory.
Only one of you needs to win. Only exactly. One Thoracle trigger needs to resolve to end the game. Mm-hmm. So if you can have two decks helping that happen, then that is in your favor. I guess that's the starting point. Like the level 1, level 2, level 3 discussion, is it called?
Yeah, sure.
Whatever.
But I mean, like an example of this combination would be what Y&R playing in the next tournament. I'm playing Kirik. A faster Kirik Swarm is pretty much my inspiration. And Y is playing Ishai and Jessica Protect Me 6 Silence Plus deck.
Yep, I am I'm running traditional counter magic to protect my partner's combo, but I am also running things like Silence. So you don't necessarily need to be in blue as the support deck in many cases. You can be playing like asymmetrical stacks pieces. You can be playing obviously counter spells, silences, removal, anything like that to whatever you feel helps your partner go off on that turn. So that's one option. Going through that, maybe you may find that double fast combo is the one that has better results. If you have one player on fast combo, one player on control, your opponents know where to put their interaction on one single person. Also, that player, the importance of the fast combo player having their fast combo means they have to mulligan more aggressively. However, if both of you are playing a fast combo deck, it may add overall consistency to going off. You kind of Naruto run at them, like Area 51, they can't stop us both kind of thing. You can just go really blisteringly fast and try to overwhelm the opponent, and then make it more of like kind of that one-on-one experience where if you look at a 1v1 format, one fast combo deck versus one control deck, it just happens with one extra player on either side now in that situation. A really cool double fast combo, you see a lot of the fast Thoracle Consult piles, pick your favorite, right? But you can also pick one outside of those colors. I mean, we see fast combos in Godo. Godo is like the poster child for a fast combo. So it was like something like Gitrog, Kirik.
Yep. Yep.
Possibly Kirik. One of the fastest.
It's very top glass 30, cannon. Maybe. Yeah.
So yeah, any double glass cannon decks that normally are waiting for their chance to, that are waiting for their opening to go for the win. Now that opening can be made by your teammate trying to win.
You can absolutely run something on the lines of Stilus, Renan, Roger, I'm sorry, Rograk, as one partner, and then you can run Savala, Brostorm, which is also a very fast combo deck for that. And that's a very interesting, basically, who's going to get there first kind of thing.
And then you have like different axes of interaction that you have to make your opponents play around. So yeah, overwhelming them can be a good strategy here, who knows. On the opposite end of the spectrum, what stops a combo deck other than a stacks deck? So to answer, if you expect double combo, then maybe you play double stacks. And one of the cool advantages of this in Two-Headed Giant is that a lot of common stacks pieces are colorless, no color identity. You can be playing multiple copies of something like a Trinisphere, for example.
or a Winter Orb or Spirit Resistance, anything like that. This is my bread and butter typically. I have played so much Stax in my life that I love it, and I actually try and to use the Two-Headed Giant as a vice to get away from my Stax normal.
It keeps coming back, though.
It does keep coming back, always. Really interesting one was Jorn and Winota as a combo. One that Y and I did ourselves was Lavinia and Rorkthar, basically land destruction stacks. That was a great combo. It was so much fun just kind of watching our opponents just kind of go, yep, we can't do anything. We're just sitting there going, yeah, while Rorkthar just smacked him in the face every time.
Bringing a pair of decks that play well underneath a Null Rod or some other kind of effect like that can be very, very strong, because you are potentially shutting off both of your opponents at that point if they're not prepared for that. Yuriko is a great one. Yuriko plays what I like to call kind of like the Holy Trinity. It gets to play Cursed Totem, Grafdigger's Cage, and Null Rod. So something like Yuriko, something like maybe like a Tatiova. I mean, my old list used to run all three. But you can certainly make a build that plays under common stacks pieces, have a partner that goes well with that, and then just deploy these roadblocks.
Just go to town. Slow them down with spike strips, you know?
Yep. And the final one worth talking about, this isn't a pair of decks worth talking about, but it's a single archetype that gets way better in a two-headed format versus a traditional CEDH. I wanted to talk about Mill. Mill is insanely good. It's actually three times as good. To win with a Mill deck in normal CEDH, and why you don't see Mill in CEDH, is because you have to mill three opponents to actually win the game. In two-headed, you need to mill one opponent, because if one person loses on draw step, then the game ends. So if you bring Bruvac, if you bring even just a traditional grinding station loop, you mill one opponent out before their draw step, then you can win just on that, mill 100 cards, I mean, less than that, but you mill one library, we're back to the basics now.
We're back to how Magic was intended.
Mill is a viable strategy in a way that it normally could be. So,
right.
Cool. Definitely worth experimenting. It's, I mean, in many ways, that's kind of untapped potential.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that, in developing the rule set around here, we kind of built towards, is that uniqueness that of Two-Headed Giant. That's why we chose Two-Headed Giant over normal Commander formats. I mean, I've played the Royal Rumbles, the Pentagrons, the whole nine. Like, I played all that. It's fun. It's great. The limited budget, the unlimited budget, the no ban list, the full ban list. Like, it's all, you know, it's fun. But like, Two-Headed Giant just adds that extra aspect. And what's better than beating up on people with your buddy?
Yeah. And these, like, weird exhibition matches are always a great way to figure out, like, what your actual strengths are. Because sometimes when you play one format, I mean, I was locked into CEDH for just, like, exclusively for a long time. And I played exclusively Modern before that. But now that I'm playing a little bit of Pauper, a little bit of CEDH, a little bit of Two-Headed now, and I would like to be getting into Legacy, it really helps you figure out how much of it is like one format, how much of your strengths and weaknesses are just by your deck choice, and then what you feel like you can maybe work on a little bit better. I feel like a lot of my threat assessment got better from playing other formats. Maybe that'll be the same for some of you.
So moving on to the next kind of areas, like some of the commander pairings, some of the partner ones. I know we mentioned a couple before, but like some of the really interesting ones that we've either A, played, or B, played against. Because a lot of people do tend to bring their spiciest of brews. So that was really dumb.
They do tend to bring their spiciest of brews.
A deadly concoction, some might say.
do tell. Do tell about these concoctions that you have experienced or played.
Well, you know what? Let's work our way up from singles to all the way up to five color that we saw. One of the ones that two of our friends did play was a Silvala Brostorm deck and Baral. It fit the combo and control aspect that we talked about earlier. Basically, the Baral was supporting and doing everything, and did have a combo finish in the deck, but was basically there and going, hey, Silvala, hey, partner, I got you. Don't worry about anything else. You do your thing.
You're not relying on Veil of Summer anymore. Now you have multiple pieces of counter magic to back up your combo turn, to play all your things. And with a deck like Baral, I mean, you can be spending counter magic on just minor things like resolving Salvala, for example. You get to open a lot of doors with that, just having a blue player on your side like that constantly. So yeah, it's like Pocket Mercy, right?
Yeah, it's literally a Pocket Mercy in your Reinhardt.
Absolutely.
For those that get that.
They'll get it.
Hopefully.
We got some gamers. If you're a gamer, leave a like. This is a gamer-friendly podcast. Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll give up the coffee we're all about. So yeah,
moving on from that.
but things like Baral Salvala, it's a good example that you don't necessarily need to use all five colors between the two of you. A monocolor deck and a monocolor deck, or like a one and a two. It's okay to leave colors on the table when you're choosing your decks. You have certain advantages, like, I mean, let's go to the obvious ones, Blood Moon, Back to Basics. Having those in your team can really hose a lot of opposing players. So it's worth thinking about. It's like, you know, every single choice has a pro and a con to it. And, you know, better mulligans, if you're trying to find a more consistent support hand, maybe a four-color deck, there's a lot more unkeepable things. If you need to, you know, if you want to hold up a mana drain to support your partner, and you're in a four-color deck, finding double blue in your starting hand is less reliable than if you're playing fewer colors. So just things like that to consider. Figure out what your role is in your team, and then, you know, say, what do I actually need to do this function properly?
Moving on to two-color pairs, just recently I played at the recent event a neat two-color pair with my partner, which was actually Cypher at this time. He was playing Vadrick, Storm, and I was playing Tevish Yoshimaru, All Dogs Go to Heaven. And it worked a lot, because a lot of times, oddly enough, I was the one protecting my partner with the silences and stuff like that.
Yeah, white-black support deck does not... I mean, most players, when you sit down against that, you don't expect that to be the support deck here, but here we are. You have a card advantage engine.
Yep.
And you have a cheap early play, and then you can churn out those responses, those stacks pieces. I know with Tevesh triggers and that contamination, I mean, you get the game locked pretty well in your favor.
We played a lot more artifacts, and I played a lot more of removal for Null Rod and Stony Silence and Collector Roof.
Yep. Yeah, it seems like a really cool pair that you brought that day. Another one, I guess it's kind of the common one. I mean, it's where, like, it's like where the week one meta is, I think. Winota Yuriko is a pretty popular option, or at least it's one that people thought of. It's one people are expecting to see.
At our first major event, I believe there were 6 or 7 Winota Yuriko decks that combined together, and they made the vast majority of the top 10 players on the field, and we had over 40-some-odd teams.
A benefit from that pairing is that... you're kind of unified in what you're trying to do. Neither player really has to change their decks very much. You're trying to get in for damage. Your stacks creatures, Yuriko plays under all types of stacks, so Winota doesn't really have to make any compromises in their deck list. So
you're both literally attacking on the same axes, and you don't have to worry about that. And then Yuriko sometimes could just go, Thoracle win.
Yeah, Yuriko does have that. Thoracle win is a nice little added bonus.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Yuriko's text says each opponent takes the damage. So in Two-Headed Giant, Yuriko essentially hits for double. You're flipping 32 damage Dracos, which is sick. Yuriko is a fun one. I mean, it's nothing... I haven't had success with it. I think I might just be unlucky. But it's so cool when it works.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth considering.
And that's something we're going to talk about more. A lot of the each opponent effects really get into... or are a lot better in this state, because... like what I said, you know, Yuriko states each opponent takes that damage. Or Gary says each opponent, well, you still have two opponents, but only one light unified life total. So things like Grey Merchant of Asphodel and Yuriko both really affect your opponents a lot. Which is another reason that I want to run, and that I'm running Kirik this, you know, recently. Because it does hinge on Gary a lot of the times. Three color options, we kind of get a little bit more talking about the three color option and what would pair with it, because you only get at max two colors, unless you count colorless as a color, but hey, here we are.
A big part of that discussion, in my opinion, is not putting all of your eggs in one basket. There are, if you've been playing CEDH, there's kind of a debatable tier list of the best colors to be in. We always see white at the bottom, so sad. I mean, you have blue up at the top, and you see blue-black is a really strong color pairing. The question becomes, do you want one player in your two-headed pairing to be on blue and black, or would you rather split that to kind of spread out your strongest cards potentially in those 99 cards? Black has the universal tutors, blue has great counter magic, and together you have the classic Thoracle combo. You see red with really great removal, with really great things like Pyroblast, Red Elemental Blast, and the Breach lines. And then you have the whole Grixis shell, right? With the great tutors set up a Brain Freeze line. And do you put all those in one deck? Do you leave your teammate with just white and green potentially? Or do you try to be creative in your deck choices to split that up between people, give a strong 99 to your team?
Right, and like, do you put the Silicin Roger deck on one and just go, hey man, I'm just gonna have you play mono white Heliod over here, like, do your thing, like, stacks, you know, just protect me, just kind of sit there, you know, because you can't play something like Gaddock Teague or, you know, Yasharn, because you pay a lot of life. Like, the Grixis Shell is probably one of the faster ones, but a unique pairing that you played recently, Y, is Derevian Magda. Which was a whole different take on that. You guys forego black, which I think is a mistake.
That's a tough call.
Yeah.
It's a tough call to give up black because, like, yeah, universal tutors and a card that I think it's a matter of time before that this is getting banned.
We might as well just go for it.
Yeah. Right now. The Scheming Symmetry is an absolute house in two headed.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's a sorcery speed Imperial Seal minus the damage, and you have to target another player. That does not say opponent. It's target another player. So you just look at your teammate, go, yo, tutor your combo to the top. I'm going to tutor mine. Or I'm going to tutor my protection or whatever you're doing to get through that. And that was a linchpin in my recent event. Because a lot of times it's like, hey, I'm going to go off. I'm going to Scheming Symmetry the piece that I'm missing to the top. Can you tutor protection for me? And it worked. And it's just bonkers, to be quite honest. It's probably one of the most pivotal pieces and the main reason that I believe that not playing black is a mistake.
You can, like, take that a step farther in that discussion. Mill is a pretty good thing in two-headed. It makes mill better. A lot of these tutors are top deck tutors. So, yeah, just, you know, food for thought. I mean, black is an insanely great color and most situations, two-headed is no exception. So I did not take that decision lightly when I brought a pair of decks that did not include black. That being said, I think we had some initial success with it. The cool thing with the Revy Magda is that they can both play under these stacks pieces. And typically with Dwarf Tribal, you're getting, if you're not going for the combo, you get something like a Tangle Wire or a Godfarer Statue, both of which a Derevi deck is perfect to sweep up those loose pieces that got left behind after that resolves. And another cool thing that helps Derevi is that Derevi kind of classically lacks a definitive game-ending outlet for your infinite mana combos. However, if your teammate is playing Magda, you are able to tap and untap with Derevi's ETB. So you have just put an infinite mana outlet or an infinite Derevi outlet into your command zone as a result. So a lot of really cool things that those unique synergies that only come up in two-headed.
And by that token, if you have infinite mana with Derevi, your opponent or your teammate has infinite mana as well.
It combos with really interesting stuff. And but I mean, you could play like Derevi with a black deck too.
Yeah, you could absolutely put black red together and you do a Croxadec using World War II Dragon Loops.
Well, I was just saying, like, that's just a throwback to literally an episode and a half ago.
Yeah, Roger Tebbish.
Yeah, like, Fast Nauseam deck, Derevi untap your teammate's Mana Vault. Maybe that's all they need to be able to get there.
Mm-hmm. When we lead into four colors, it's, you know, what is that extra color going to do for you? What is it actually going to help you with? What's it going to produce for you?
Yeah. I think at four color, it is just about how strong the shell of the deck is at that point.
I'd absolutely slam a blue farm deck and a Yeva deck together to attack on that, or a Sylvala Brostorm and a blue farm deck. You know, you get to play all the strong pieces in blue farm, have your teammate do their thing on mono green. And then we get into our personal favorites, but we are too scared to try kind of things.
It's the ultimate meme. It's the ultimate untapped meme potential that I just want to see this take a tournament down.
And I have the idea, and neither Y nor Cypher wants to join me in it because we're too scared. But I firmly believe that the deck combination of Cody, Vociferous Codex, and Hope of Gyarapur could be a bonkers combo, because you only have one opponent playing blue, and Cody can easily combo out turn two. So you play your Hope on one, you attack the blue player with Hope, you crack Hope so they can't cast non-creature spells, and you go, here you go, partner, and that's it. You know, that's I one of my dreams kind of thing. And I don't want to let my memes be dreams.
Yep, I think that deck is just always a possible option for when your local playgroup gets a little bit too cute with their combinations. Sometimes you just have to just play the most insane, fastest, like, just the most insane combo you can.
Absolutely. And Cody is just, it's proven to be one of the fastest decks in the format right now. I think it just recently, and by recently, whenever you're listening to this, it's still technically an event, took down one of the events over in one of the Tier 1 cons, so, or it did very well, at least, you know, within the top 10, top 16, so.
Yeah. It was there.
It was there in spades.
Yep, it performs well in a four-player pod. And two-headed, you have fewer people trying to stop you.
Yeah.
And, well, even better than that, you not only have less people, you have fewer people trying to stop you, and you have one more person trying to help you. So you're at a plus two on how strong your kind of make-em-have-it combo is. With all that in mind, we're going to wrap this episode up with getting kind of specific on a couple things that, like, we're just going to pick some of our fan favorites so far playing this format on things that we discovered, like, specific single card that seemed to really shine in a two-headed environment.
And or things that were very dull.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they can't all be winners.
Exactly. One of my controversial takes, I'll just start it off like this. Less players means less usefulness in these following three cards that have become staples on CEDH tables. Mystic Remora, Esper Sentinel, Rhystic Study, and Ragavan, Nimble Pilferer. I am very much in the camp of, you're losing a player, so that makes those three cards infinitely worse.
33% worse.
You're absolutely
correct. One third worse.
And they just kind of do nothing because the games are slightly slower. As for Ragavan, your opponent can block for you. It's in the two-headed giant rules. Your partner can block for you. So you literally just go, I'm going to swing in, and the opponent goes, no, I'm going to chump with my dork. Yeah. Or I'm going to chump with my Esper Sentinel.
Unified combat puts a lot more priority on creatures with evasion. Ragavan is just a 2-1. It is a Savannah Lion in more games than you're happy to see.
Yep. Even if you're dashing it out, it's like, great. It's a Savannah Lion with haste. You know, yeah, it has upside if it connects, but that's if it connects. And having a partner to assist you in blocking kind of changes that whole dynamic.
I feel like it gets better if you're playing with a teammate that's playing a good portion of removal spells. If you're able to ensure that Ragavan gets in for damage, it could be a thing. I wonder, like, Ragavan as commander, if that's, like, a viable option.
Zergo Bolt Striker is, I think it might been banned in Duel Commander.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe there's merit to having Ragaman in your command zone. Just having a partner with removal, that could be, you know, that could be something. But, I mean, other than these corner cases, I think as a general rule of thumb, you're not getting in for that early treasure with Ragaman as often.
Right. I mean, on turn 1-2, yeah, maybe. But afterwards, you're like, eh. So, no comment on the Esper Sentinel versus.
No, I mean, I agree on your point. Like, yeah. Like it is like the potential for them to get you cards is less. There is one less player that can be triggering it. So by that extension, I mean, it's, you get less out of it. It really is that simple. I mean, we never really see Rhystic Mystic being played in a 1v1 format. So the viability of these cards, we can see from top 8 decks, the viability of them drops off significantly, somewhere between the 4-player pods and the 2-player pods. So, you know, a two-headed match is right in between those two. So it's hard to properly evaluate just how good or how useful it really is. Certainly cuttable.
Absolutely. How about some all-stars or things that didn't perform for your side?
In my opinion, Yuriko left something to be desired, although that could have been a me thing. Yuriko out of the box, it goes with the unified combat thing again. You are playing a lot of cheap ninjas, and Yuriko thrives when there is a player in your pod that you get to hit for free damage and free ninja triggers. There's usually like a greedy combo deck there. You know, a lot of these decks now are on 10 or fewer creatures, especially in the 4-color lists. So Yuriko is able to prey on those pretty readily. And it's two-headed, those opportunities happen less frequently, and it's more important to have cards that are straight unblockable. Like a Gudul Lurker is a really cool one that really I think should see more play in a two-headed Yuriko. Just like straight unblockable text gets a lot better in two-headed if you have a combat-centric deck. But you do have to make some concessions in the case of Yuriko or in the case of Winota. Winota wants to go back to some more flyers in the deck, for example. But at least Winota has that combat prowess that if you get like a Blade Historian or a Rickon play, then you can still get through for damage. You still have great combat dominance. Yuriko doesn't have that advantage. It really needs a free player to attack. So I think just like as a whole, like the 99 of Yuriko gets worse.
One of the partner pairings, I used to say, that I did see with Yuriko at one of our events was Yuriko and Sidar Kondo, insert X partner. I can't quite remember the partner that it was with.
One of them with red.
It was one of them with, I'm pretty sure they were running red, or they might have just been running another green one, like Kamal or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
It was Tana. It was Sidar Kondo and Tana.
Could have been like Bruce Tarl too. I mean, I don't know if they were, but like Bruce Tarl wouldn't be bad.
No, because they went with Tana because of 1/1 creatures, and Sidar Kondo's text says,
I mean, Tana's a 2/2, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that also is unblockable. That's cool.
Yeah, creatures can't be blocked for 2 or less. Hold on.
Yeah, I believe it says your opponents can't block creatures that you. Your opponents can't block creatures with power 2 or less, and that includes yours. It also includes everyone in the game. So that would include your partner.
Correct. And that's what made Sidar Kondo kind of work very well with Yuriko, because, like what I said, you didn't have to worry about that getting that evasiveness if that your partner supporting you gave you that evasiveness.
Yeah. I think the list of bad cards is a constantly growing list every time I try to play this format. I always end up like mid-game and like, well, this doesn't do anything.
Wow, this sucks.
Yeah, why am I on this? Yeah.
Man, this would be great if I had, you know, 4 players that were all attacking me individually.
Yeah. Oh, I got one. You know what card sucks?
What card?
Cyclonic Rift.
Oh, absolutely. I'm even not on Cyclonic Rift in 4-player pods. I know, controversial. You know, burn me down, whatever you want to do. I'm a lot less high on Cyclonic Rift nowadays in 2-headed and in, what's called? In 2-headed especially, because it affects your partner.
Yeah, the overload on Cyclonic Rift says you don't control. So you're going to be bouncing everyone but you. I mean, that's cool if you have a solo win to follow it up with, but you really have to plan around that kind of thing a lot more. Electricity, by the same token, gets a lot worse unless you specifically built a deck that that your teammate is playing without X1s, which, you know, still viable, but
So basically any of the overload cards. Yeah.
Yep, overload in general gets a little bit worse.
Yeah. One of the cards that I've that is my specific tech that I've been teching in for all my Yuriko Winota needs for Two at a Giant is Moment of Peace. It's the combat silence. It can only be cast in combat, and what it does is it silences your opponents and ends combat right there. So you automatically move right out of combat, so any Winota triggers on the stack, any type of Yuriko triggers on the stack, they just poof.
It's time stop for the combat step.
Correct. Correct. Any other cards you can think of?
I mean, I have some really good ones in mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
On the opposite end of the spectrum. Fire Covenant. It is the only reason I want to play specifically black-red in a two-headed format. Card is sick. It is complete Raigeki for your opponent's stuff, and when you're playing with a high life total, it does insane things. It's like just super free and super one-sided, and if they are playing creatures, that card will be the thing you tutor for. That puts you in the driver's seat firmly and immediately. It's also an instant. It just... Card's so good. If you resolve that, you're just in such great shape.
Yeah, you're sitting in a prime position. I mean, again, elephant in the room, Scheming Symmetry. You know, see our previous discussion maybe, you know, a couple minutes ago.
Yeah, that one's obviously good out of the box, right, though, too. I think some other things that are, like, just insanely good are... it's kind of the mind... You have to put yourself in the mindset of, if my commander could be playing this color, what would I be on? So you can find out some really cool tech for, like, specific decks by that train of thought. One that I found when I was playing Green-White Solvala, being, you know, having a tap ability for the mana ability that draws cards. Intruder Alarm is a great card. You have to build around it. You have to have a deck that's prepared to take advantage of it. Unlocks so many decks, specifically the green ones. Generally speaking, Mana Dorks with Intruder Alarm is just a really great combination that is a little bit too slow for modern CEDH, in my opinion, in, like, recent memory. You have, like, Jeskai Ascendancy combo that, you know, it sees some fringe play, and, you know, shout out to you, you know, kudos to you if you're on it still in 2022. I think that's really cool. But, like, generally speaking, you're not expecting to see people rely on the untapping Mana Dorks combo. In two-headed, if you're able to split that up, it becomes way better. Green-White Salvala wishes it could play Intruder Alarm. Mono-Green Salvala wishes that it could run something like a Freed from the Real. So you're making all these combos that you're just stretching them over two different decks. And last time I'm going to say it, going back to the middle strategy, you know what's a sick combo that doesn't see any play in CEDH? Is the Painter Servant Grindstone combo. Like I said, you only have to mill one player, tutor them in your own ways, whichever way the deck likes to get those pieces in play.
I actually had that experience with Painter Servant and Grindstone at an event. The same event, well, the same LGS that we are going to soon, that me and my other partner won. He was on Roger Tevish and I was on Shorokai. I had an Urza Saga about to pop, and he had a Vampiric Tutor in his hand, and I stopped him. I went, "Oh, we win here." And he went, "We win here? How do we win here?" And I explained to him, I said, "Hey, Grindstone's at one, on one. I can tutor up a Grindstone with my Urza Saga. You can tutor up Painter Servant, name whatever color you want, bing, bang, boom, Bob's your uncle," and we milled them. And the look on our opponent's faces when we just looked at them and went, "Yeah, mill you?" was kind of silly, to be quite honest. They were a little perplexed, and they really enjoyed it. Another card that gets better is, like I said, Grey Merchant of Asphodel. And another one that I actually got to combo with was Bolas the Citadel. Because you sacrifice 10 permanents and deal 10 damage to both your opponents.
Yeah. Citadel not only doubles the output damage, but also on the input side, you have a higher life total in two-headed. Your Bolas the Citadel, and by that extension, the obvious one, your ad nauseams get a little bit better too, by a good margin. So, yeah, things like that. Things that involve paying life, having a high life total. Adnaz, Bolas the Citadel, Fire Covenant, I don't know, Tarnished Citadel, you're not as, like, stressed about making mana with that one. So yeah, just a lot of cards that utilize the life total get a little bit easier.
I think that about wraps it up for the Two-Headed Giant discussion here. Do you have any parting words here?
I think I've said them all. I'm out of words to say, and I'm out of coffee.
I really just finished my coffee.
You actually?
I actually did just finish my coffee. Unscripted. So I'm actually all out.
That's what we call method acting, folks.
And scene.